If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Here is a teaser of my Patreon-only interview with journalist Max Blumenthal, in which he talks about what he learned from traveling to Venezuela and Syria. To hear the rest of the episode, please go to patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow.
I'm not a big Beatles fan either. It feels kind of like nerdy music that like you're supposed to dance to with your hippie child or something.
Yeah.
Then you take like black and white photos of yourself as like this cool super dad dancing with your son to the Beatles. You keep the record player on at night. Turn on the record player and put on the Beatles. Dance with your son. Talk to them on the phone.
What is this?
There's 4 million words that they can learn more than black children. I mean, poor children.
This divided?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
We bring social workers into homes of parents to help them deal with how to raise their children. It's not that they don't want to help. They don't know quite what to do. Play the radio. Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night, the phone. Make sure the kids hear words. A kid coming from a very poor school, a very poor background, will hear 4 million words fewer spoken by the time they get there.
You heard about Corn Pop?
Corn Pop is real.
I mean, you should go find him, track him down.
He was tracked down. His obituary was discovered in a local paper, and there was an NAACP chair from Wilmington who spoke about Corn Pop after Biden. Corn Pop was a well-known ne'er-do-well, scofflaw, engaged in many shenanigans.
Right.
Malarkey. Whipped out a lot of straight blade razors.
Right.
You remember they used to scrape him on the pavement, get him rusty. You remember what it was like. You know, I told him I'd wrap a chain around his head if he didn't get off the diving board. Everyone missed that part.
He really said that?
When Biden was saying, turn on the record player. He out of nowhere, he says, get on the phone.
Make sure you have the record player on at night. The phone.
Get on the phone. What does that mean? Biden obviously had been, getting hammered for like his role in the crime bill and putting lots of black people in prison, saying, horrible things about them on the Senate floor. And he couldn't answer the question about slavery except without telling them to turn on the record player. So he schedules this event at this swimming pool and he whips out the Corn Pop story. I believe it was 2008. He claimed that he had been a civil rights activist.
Right.
And there was no record of that.
But
and
he said, lifeguarding, right?
Guess what? I was a lifeguard, which resulted
in
a black pool. Yeah. And it resulted in the weirdest photo op everywhere. If you look up Biden lifeguard and go to, Google Images or whatever, it's him in a suit sitting in a lifeguard chair.
Like a bathing suit or like a suit?
No, just like a three-piece suit, not a Speedo. And there are these black youth just like standing below the chair. Like,
there's a picture of Joe Biden sitting on a lifeguard chair. I thought you meant from the time that he was doing it.
No. This is like a recent
one. So was he reenacting it?
Yeah. They put him up in the chair and they're like, that's the chair you sat in above the black people.
Pull out
Oh, they named the pool after him.
Oh, yeah. My God.
So it's
wow.
a Joe Biden pool.
City pool named for former VP Joe Biden. This is from 2017. Okay, got it. Anything else you want to talk about?
I wanted to talk about coming back from Syria.
Okay, so let's do it.
I was just in a country that, you know, we've heard so much about for years. And I was in a part of the country where most Syrians live, which is government-controlled territory. And that's really most of the country right now, now that the war is winding down, or the war which was imposed on Syria from the outside is over. I got to see the areas around Damascus. You know, one of the first impressions I had was how close these foreign-backed extremists came to overrunning large parts of Damascus or the city itself. And, you know, you see the Syrian flag over Damascus. What does it represent? It represents a post-colonial Arab state. For many Syrians, it also represents kind of not secularism, but the Syrian mosaic of religious minorities living together. And, you know, it is a police state, but they've been able to have a pluralistic society. And you can actually imagine black flags flying over Damascus when you go there. And particularly when we were staying in the old city, not the cool Antifa flags.
What are black flags? I don't know.
The Islamic State, yeah. Al-Qaeda. In Damascus, the city was surrounded to the east by Jaish al-Islam, which was a Saudi-funded Wahhabi militia that was run by Zahran Alush, who is a fanatical Wahhabi preacher who pledged explicitly to cleanse Syria of religious minorities. He would use the term cleanse. And we're staying in Bab Sharki, which is the easternmost gate of the old city, for several days without any regime minders or whatever anyone thinks. We're just kind of there. We went across a highway, which is right at the gate, wandered into this neighborhood towards the ruins of Ghouta, which is an area that had been run as a kind of mini Islamic state by Jaish al-Islam, within a stone's throw from the old city. And when I say the old city, I mean, this is a Christian area where Christians fled from Roman persecution. It's where Saul became Saint Paul.
Better call Saint Paul.
Yeah, there are Greek churches there that are 1,000 years old, and there's still an active Christian community there that's living in harmony with Muslims. And you know, you can hear the Muslim call to prayer from there. And, you know, anyway, we walk across this highway. You can see wreckage in the distance. We walk through a yard of destroyed public buses, which are just riddled with bullet holes. And we meet a guy who lives in what's left of the neighborhood behind there. And he described life under Jaish al-Islam. He had lived under their control for 4 months. You know, I peppered him with questions. You know, what was it like? He said it was like living in a mini Saudi Arabia. They didn't cut people's hands off. They executed them in the street for violating their laws. They stole everyone's food. They stole the aid, and then they stockpiled it and sold it back to the people at inflated prices. And they've moved on to start multi-million dollar businesses in Turkey. You know, they disappeared women, raped them. They were just turned the whole neighborhood into a living hell. The guy described it as a horror show. And then they tried to attack the old city and take it over, and they were stopped by the Syrian army. At that time, they took a few hundred civilians or 100 civilians and put them in a horse stable and told the government, you'll kill them all if you attack us. So they engaged in this prolonged negotiation, and then they were all let out in green buses to go to the province of Idlib, which is where the fighting is now. And, you know, throughout that whole time, a lot of the people who were attacking us signed this open letter in the New York Review of Books demanding that the U.S. provide protection to Ghouta and to the insurgent Wahhabi forces in Ghouta that were making life hell for these. This is a guy who owns, he worked in a sandwich shop. You know, he's just a regular guy who himself was Muslim. And he said, we were so happy when the army came and liberated us. And this is just something you're not allowed to hear in the U.S. So many places we went were surrounded on all sides. And when people accuse us of being genocide apologists, they should go talk to the religious minorities of Syria. What they experienced was a near genocide, and life for Sunni Muslims who are living under the control of these fanatics was absolutely horrible as well.
To hear the rest of the episode, please go to patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow.